Greetings. I am Shusada Kona Kumada. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody. This is Shusada Kona Kumada, and you are listening to Satsang on BBS Radio. Thank you so much for listening in with us tonight. I've got PLEN, Megan, and Linda here from the Kumara Center for Spiritual Awareness, and we are ready to get started with you. So take a nice deep breath. I'm going to clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, and the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth one shaft of pure Christ light to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Last one was a doozy. I got a little overzealous with the singing bowl. People out there are like, All right. Excellent. Let me make one quick announcement. Next Monday for the solstice, there is a global meditation led by a group called Add Your Energy, and we take part every solstice and equinox for this meditation. They run it for like a 24-hour period, and we hold a physical meditation here in Charlotte. But the purpose is to get people collectively to come together with the focus of holding the space of loving equanimity for humanity and the planet. And it's something that if you're familiar with our work, you know, we do this like every Wednesday night just for a 10-minute thing that's called Hold the Space. And then we do these collective gatherings that we call Embrace the Space for longer periods. So this is what we're doing for the solstice. And if you would like to, one of the things that's very cool is when we do these, I have a meditation music-wise that comes in that I create. And this is not your standard meditation. It is not meditation music. It's meant, it's got more of a social construct behind it. So it's meant for us to move into our hearts and then allow the music to take us into places where the energies are disqualified. So what that looks like in the world is music that comes up that has a social message, that has, you know, a kind of a story behind it that can bring up disqualified energies, painful energies, you know, energies that are distorted. And it allows us as a group to move that energy that that particular song engages and to lift that and to transmute it back into its divine state. It's very, very powerful work. And if you are interested in taking part in the actual meditation, then we are going to have that playlist running for, I think, just basically a 24-hour period. But here on the East Coast, we're going to run it from 7 to 9. And if you would like to listen into that, you can go to either the Facebook page, which is facebook.com, AYE Gatherings, and you can go to the events page and look for Embrace the Space, and you can get all the information plus the link there. Or you could also, will we have the link up on our website, PLN? Do we know? Will the link for that be on the website? It can be.
If Tim can do it, yes.
Okay, so we will try our best to do that, to also put it on kamaracenter.org, and just we'll put it somewhere prominent, probably under media, so which is where you would go to see our BBS stuff anyway. So if you go there, we'll stick a link there, and it should direct you right over to the playlist and the station that's playing on. So we're very excited to do it, and this is something we're all really passionate about here, and the energy is always just off the charts for us here in Charlotte anyway, and as we continue to grow this globally, it'll just become more and more powerful, and there will just be more opportunity for some serious shifting. So it's a wonderful thing. Again, facebook.com, AYE Gatherings. And okay. And then we won't be with you live just for the next 2 weeks because of Christmas and New Year's, but we will have our archives running. And you all, please feel free to listen to those and get your fix for the week if you don't have other things to do for Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. Okay, so we had a really nice session here in Charlotte, and I'd like to, like I usually do, kind of come back to what we did in Charlotte, because that seems to be what's moving tonight. So, seems like the topic of the night, if I'm not mistaken, was surrender, yeah? Would you not say that, yeah? Okay. And I have students that I have worked very closely with for a long time, who are all in the middle of this particular struggle, seems to be collective right now. It's this state of, it's part of the process of dissolution that everybody experiences. Sometimes it's over a longer period of time to lesser degrees. Sometimes you get hit with the whole shebang in one chunk, and eventually it does kind of come like that, because what happens is that the ego, the personal self, it is experiencing, you have to remember, throughout the dissolution process, if you started with the level of work that I do, and if you've had the ability to learn the processing work that we also do, that work is what enables you to build an inroad into consciousness. It actually, you remember, you know, you've got the conscious side of your consciousness, and there's the unconscious side of your consciousness. And that's creating a whole lot of your reality, and you can't see it. It's hidden from you. This work enables you to get in at that level. It doesn't happen right away. It's a like a training that you're training the mind to hold a single focus, you know, through meditation. You're training the mind to basically, over the course of time, relax into deeper and deeper self-inquiry. Probably the best way I could describe that. Because initially, it's just highly resistant. If you're someone who comes to this level of work and you're looking for it, then the resistance will be less than, you know, someone who has no interest in, you know, if you said to them, would you like to walk off the life-death cycle, they'd probably want to go get you locked up someplace. So for anyone who understands what that means and feels a resonance with that, then you probably are already less resistant than most of the people on the planet to begin with. So that's a good thing. Going into the work, though, you don't just jump from kind of you have no understandings and then you move immediately to experiences that will help you actualize the understandings. It takes time. And this is what the ego starts to experience is first after it starts to let up on its resistance and starts to allow more questioning to come forward. And actually it starts to allow looking and entertaining concept that says, oh, maybe I did do that on purpose to hurt that person, you know, like that kind of thing, that normally it would have all the justifiers in the world that would support why it did what it did, and it wouldn't even be open to looking at its own agenda beneath it. So it moves into that, but ultimately, you know, ego is ego, and ultimately it fears its own demise, and that's really what people deal with. Right up until the very end. So even on a physical level. So the what's going on with some of my students is that their outside world has, over the last, you know, month, 2 months or whatever, continually it's been ramping up, that more and more stuff is presenting in their daily lives and in their outside world that they can't just dismiss anymore. That they can't just look past, that they can't just justify away and come up with good excuses and good reasons for not paying attention to it or even doing something about it. And so they're getting hammered from all directions with the big question of where have I been functioning from? Where have I been making my choices from? And the reason this is hitting a lot of the students who've been with me a long time is because now is truly the time when, you know, push comes to shove and you're in it to the place where it's no longer an option to not function from the space of right action. Now, in the beginning levels of work, you are constantly going back and forth. You know, like in certain areas of life, it's easy to move into right action because there isn't a big struggle there. And you may find it very intuitive to do and no big deal. As you continue to do more and more, and as the dissolution continues to happen, then you will be pushed to go into those areas of your world where there is a lot of resistance, areas where you don't want to. You know, heretofore, you have not wanted to really see what's going on there. And as you continue to do your work, you will be given an opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to make choices from your understandings. And you've heard me speak before on how that is not an easy task to begin with. But if you are doing this level of work, it is expected that if you signed up to do this work, you will walk it out, which means it doesn't stay, you know, ruminating around in the headspace and then you don't take action with it. That's not the point. This is not meant to be some kind of intellectual exercise for the ego. This is meant to be experiential. And the only thing that ever does change anybody is the experience of it. And a lot of you, I mean, you understand that. Now, of course, for humanity, the understanding there is that, like, you have to experience it, like, in the outside world in order to know it. And for humanity as a whole, that holds true. And there's a reason for that. The reason, and it is very simple, but this is a very powerful understanding when you really lock it in. The reason that holds true for humanity is because, as a collective, the humanity will never do the self-inquiry necessary in order for that for the experience to not have to come through the outside world. So remember, your inner world and your outer world is the same. And the outer world is the outpicturing of the level of consciousness that you're holding. So if something is coming up and there is inner resistance and you're getting the energetics and the indications from your intuition, indications from your conscience, that there's something not quite right, and if you continue to ignore it, there's only one thing that can happen, and that is that it has to come to you in your outside world. Okay? But the beautiful thing is that it doesn't have to happen. And that's something that my students have been given the understanding of. And it's so powerful for them, especially the ones who truly have signed up to do the work. Because I have students who, you know, that is the goal. It's get off the life-death cycle of this go-round. Like, this is it. We've done all this work for lifetimes, and this is the culminating lifetime. So what do we need to do to be done? And this is exactly the piece that is so beautiful for them, because what they begin to recognize is, up until now, your whole world has been you reacting to the outside world, right? And of course, that's because you spent a whole lifetime completely unconscious. You weren't really showing up for the game. And then everything that's happening is based on the patterning, right? So the whole action reaction thing, that's just patterned consciousness. It's not even you. As you start to develop that inroad into your own consciousness, you become more capable of being present and then actually being in a space where you can make conscious choice. Conscious choice is really not something that humanity as a whole is capable of. Now, I know that sounds crazy. I mean, that sounds crazy to people. They say, what are you talking about? Like, we have free will here. Yeah, you do, but your understanding of free will is really not full. Is it true that the ego has free will? Yes, absolutely. Is the ego capable of free will? No, because all it does is it functions from action and reaction. It reacts to the stimulus, and it reacts to the stimulus based on the imprinting. Now, it's very good at making it seem as though you are making the choice. But that's only because you can't see it all. If you could see it all, which is what my students end up going into, is actually seeing where they set it up to begin with, where they never could have seen it any other way. But once they get in there and they understand the patterning and how it works, then they can start to see how they set themselves up to experience that whole thing. And then the reaction to it has to happen because it reinforces the pattern. Now, you aren't meant to function on an unconscious level as a human, right? Christed consciousness actually has choice. It has choice. There is the choice between right action and not right action. And it's free to do so as it chooses. However, even there, at the level of Christed consciousness isn't going to make an incorrect choice, is it? Because right action is right action. So the whole concept of free will is here, but it's not even here, if you want to look at it that way. So the point is to get you to a place where you make choice based on clear, objective sight, and not based on emotional impulse, not based on polarized thinking, not based on judgment and desire and unmet needs, which is where everyone makes their choices from to begin with. And this is, it sounds like, oh, that'd be lovely. And it is. But getting from the way it's always been to that spot can feel, excruciatingly painful. Now, it's not real, the dissolution of that personal self that you call you isn't real, because the personal self that you call you isn't real to begin with. So its own, quote unquote, death process, if you want to think of it that way, is just as illusory as the personality is. But that's not the experience of it when you're walking through it, because it does feel like you're just having to surrender everything about yourself, is what it feels like. And it's a bit unnerving. And I've watched with my students, and it's beautiful. It's such a beautiful experience for me, because I watch my students walk through the same exact things that I had to walk through. And their, of course, their particular story may be different, but the underlying concepts that are coming up are the same exact thing that I've walked through. So it's such a gift for me to watch others, you know, travel that same path and watch them come to the same understandings. And it's a gift for me to be able to share my experience with them as well, so that when they have theirs and then I can come in after and share mine, it's confirmation for them that what they're seeing and what they're experiencing is accurate. You see, it's a beautiful thing. So what I witness a lot right now in the students is something that I remember so clearly walking through myself, which was, you know, being in a space where that voice is constantly tugging at you about all the things that, where you're failing in the world, you know, where you're not up to snuff, not holding your weight, any place where you're not feeling good enough. And this is something that, of course, everyone deals with. Whether you're aware of it or not, it's there. You have to remember, some people sit in that very easily, feeling like I'm not good enough, and there it's very easy for them to vocalize that. Others, through the mostly through like the guise of self-empowerment or self-worth, high self-worth, would not agree with that. But generally speaking, that's a cover-up for the pain that's actually sitting underneath it, that is low self-worth, because inadequacy is the basis of the ego, period. Inadequacy and self-righteousness and inadequacy are the same thing. They just present differently. One presents internally and the other one presents externally, but they're the same thing. And it's a huge deal on this planet, inadequacy. So here's the thing, though, right? So you've got everyone who is divine, right? Walking on the planet, not remembering who they are and what they are, and that within them still exists their knowing. And so they get trapped in this whole value system that was created out of fallen consciousness. It was created out of polarization. Why do we have a fiat money system that literally functions with the undercurrent of scarcity? Like, that's the basis of the money system, scarcity, which is in complete opposition to what is, which is utter abundance, right? If you look on our planet, and you look at nature and how nature functions, it functions from a space of like crazy amounts of abundance. You know, look at an apple tree and you have one apple that falls. Well, how many seeds, how many potentialities for new life exist in just the one apple? Not to mention, you know, the couple hundred or however many apples will fall from one tree. Not to mention how, you know, exponentially great that is. If you look at a whole orchard, that's abundance. And we see it everywhere. And yet humanity creates this system where the fundamental aspect of it is that it's hard to get your hands on, you know? And then we all run around trying to gather pieces of paper because it means something. It determines where we stand in the world, and it determines our worth to the world. I mean, look at that. Look at that. How many pieces of paper you have determines your worth in the world. It's insane if you look at it from that very simple vantage point, or even how many bars of gold you have, that would determine your worth to the world. But that's how everyone functions. Unless, of course, we're going to play with that a little bit, because, you know, we can tweak it a little so we don't seem quite so self-absorbed. And we can say that, oh, other than maybe school teachers and nurses and ministers, right? People who make definitely not enough money, but they, you know, but they're doing it because they're in service, or they're doing it because of their hearts. And so we will value them, right? We won't value them enough to give them more paper, but we will value them, you know? So where does everyone sit within that, within just who you are in your own life? And this is what we were looking at earlier, you know, part of the thing that ego moves through is moving more and more into a place where it starts to recognize where it's been functioning from a really distorted viewpoint. Feeling like you have to keep up appearances in any way is not part of your nature. That is strictly home of the ego. The ego that's always clamoring to be on top somehow, or at least acceptably high, whatever that means. So the whole thing of I have to look a certain way, I have to keep my body in a certain state, I have to maintain it. And so if something starts to sag or droop or wrinkle or whatever, I've got to take action to stop it, to reverse it. It's highly, highly distorted. I mean, you're not even the body itself anyway. And you're going to get all hung up on what it looks like. But isn't that what society tells you you're supposed to do? There was a passage in Initiation that I loved it. For those of you, one of my favorite books that was given to me to read, I think it was the first. No, I think I read Yogananda first, but then it was like the second book that I was ever given to read was Initiation by Elizabeth Haish. And it's her own personal story of her awakening process. It's just beautiful. But there's a place in it. This is what it's reminding of me. There's a place where she's talking to her son, and her son as a young boy is having past life recall of being a man who lived in, you know, it was a jungle area. So I'm guessing it was like probably in Africa, or maybe it was even South America. Never kind of, I think he was supposed to be black. So I'm guessing it was in Africa, but in the, he would draw these pictures, and in these pictures, he would draw this woman, you know, who was very typical, I'm guessing African. So I don't think they had any clothes or anything like that. And his mother, Elizabeth Haish, made a comment to her son about, oh, you know, isn't she ugly? Because she has these long sagging breasts, right? Of course, these African women didn't wear bras. So she has the natural form of a woman's breast who has had children and nursed them. And, you know, gravity has done its thing. And he got all, you know, offended by that. And he said, absolutely not. He said, she's beautiful, you know. Because in his world, from their worldview, that was beautiful to them. And it's a nice indicator of how society deems, you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, and how we get sucked into believing it and then following it. And even if we can say we don't believe it, or even if we can say that we think it's wrong, and we'll use the female form for this because this is perfect. So how long, you know, have women been saying it's ridiculous to use a size 0 model to model clothing when women are on average a size 14 now? It's ridiculous, right? But yet, if they came out with magazines that featured size 14 women, how many women would buy the magazines? Really? Because women are still clamoring to be that, you know. It may not ever happen. There may be no way on earth it's ever going to happen to me, but I can still look at it and dream. I can hope, the trickster hope, you know, pretend that that's real for me. But there are some magazines who have started doing that. They've actually started getting rid of the whole Photoshopping thing and presenting. I mean, have you ever seen what the Photoshopping stuff does to a woman? It's ridiculous. They start with a beautiful model to begin with, and they turn her into something completely different. And there have been models who are starting to stand up and say, I don't want you doing that to my representation anymore, because that's not real. That's not me. So you're not Photoshopping me, you know, and they're taking a stand on it. It's fantastic. That's really fantastic. Because this is what has to happen. I mean, we've created in the fashion industry, and this isn't, you know, this didn't come from women. We've got to be realistic about it. It came from men. And in the fashion industry, we've created this image of what a woman should look like in order to appeal to a man that is completely and utterly unrealistic. I mean, let's face it, even the models can't meet it if they're having to be photoshopped. So you're taking the best of the best and then you have to tweak her, right? It's crazy. It's crazy. And then it's no wonder you've got all these young girls who have eating disorders and bulimia and anorexia and incredibly low self-worth. And it's just ridiculous. And where does the change happen? Where does the change happen? Because this all comes back to what I'm saying. This is why it's so difficult. Because even if you're raising your daughter, that she's more beautiful without the makeup, or that she's beautiful because of her intelligence or whatever it is, right? To really try to drive that home. What she's getting collectively is not that, right? So what effect does it have ultimately? I mean, we can hope for the best, right? But the downside is that she's going to, you know, be around guys at some point, and she's going to get an understanding pretty darn quick of what guys prefer. And then what's she going to do? Most likely, unless she is an incredibly strong girl, most likely she's going to do whatever she feels she needs to do to get the attention of the guys, right? Because she's desiring the acceptance and desiring the love. It takes an incredible amount of self-worth to not do that, because you don't need it from the outside. And which is where, you know, everyone who's doing dissolution work, that's where you're headed, because everyone has needed it from the outside. You're searching outside of you for the thing that exists within you, but it's covered up. And so that's what you're doing. You're peeling away all those layers that are keeping you from experiencing that within. And then when you experience it within, it doesn't matter on the outside. Now, that doesn't mean you don't ever put eyeshadow on. It doesn't mean that you don't do anything. It just means you stop looking for it outside, because you don't need it anymore. It's not an unmet need now. See, it's not an unmet need. There's no desire there. There's no desire there. There's no judgment in place. And then the justifiers don't have to be there to cover up the judgments. Hard to do, though. You know, hard to do. You're battling the conditioning of a collective of billions of individuals. And that's why the ego struggles so hard. That's why it can hurt so bad. That's why it feels like it's dying. Because everything in it is going, no, 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 no. Don't ask me to do that. But something else is saying, yeah, you've held it long enough. You can let it go now. You can let it go now. It's okay. You know? And don't think that ego just goes, okay, I'll trust you. That's not what's going to happen. The personal self is going to fight it, and it will continue to fight it. How is it going to do that? You're going to experience it in the world, because you're going to be, you know, boy, I'm good today, and I'm going to the grocery store without makeup. And I'm going to be glad I did it, right? And so you're going to do it, and you're going to go to the grocery store, and you're feeling great, and you turn the corner, and you turn, and you run into this woman who is just coiffed to the ceiling, you know? And she looks at you, and she looks down at you with this, like, oh, poor thing, you know? And in that moment, can you still hold it? When the judgment's right there in your face, can you still hold it? That, you know what? You may have paid a fortune for what you got. I don't need it. You're beautiful. You are. But do I need it for me? No. Doesn't mean I can't do it. Could I do it? Sure, I could do it. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. But I don't have to have it, and I don't need it. You see? And that's the difference. Doesn't mean you don't ever do it, because maybe one day you just feel like doing it. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. but you don't need it. There's no pride in there anymore that says, you know, I have to be seen a certain way. And it's very easy to say, well, I'm not the body. So if I'm not the body, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's easy to say that. But what also is going on is that inside you understand that 99.99999% of humanity thinks you are the body. And so it becomes not so much about how I think about myself as what do they think about me. Well, of course, it's the same thing, right? It's the same thing. Your fear of how they think about you is how you think about you. So we have to start looking at, you know, these places in our lives where we are judging ourselves based on the value system of the collective, and understand that the value system of the collective was born out of disqualified energy to begin with. The value system of the planet is really contorted. Because you'll see, because it's polarized, right? Just like everything else. So you're going to see values that generally run just like the ego. On one side, there's the what you would equate to positive states of mind, the things that you're going to try to hold, right? Consciously, just like what you're all doing. You try to hold yourselves in positive states of mind, right? Positive emotions. I'm working really hard to, you know, feel good about myself and be excited about life and experience greater peace, right? And you work very hard to do that. Well, all at the same time, all of the negative states of mind are working under the surface for you. And you are just in resistance or denial, so you stay out of it. You know, trying to always claw to get out of the water before it sucks you up. And so the value system of humanity functions the same way. You know, we will say that we value certain things, but then when you really look at the actions of humanity, what we show is that that's not accurate. When was the last time, you know, a woman got put on the cover of Cosmopolitan magazine because of her IQ? Right? This, you know, this month we're selecting from Mensa. Mensa people. Doesn't happen. So we say we value this, but then what shows up in the world? You know, and it goes back to, like I've said many times, you know, your words are one thing and your actions are something else. It's nice when the words and the actions correspond. Generally, they don't, because that's just built into the hypocrisy of the system, where I will say one thing, but I'm going to do the opposite. And it's the doing that shows you where you're really functioning from, not what you say. You can say anything, right? But it's how you actually act in the world that shows where you're functioning from. So I can read all the books on codependency and I can become really smart about what it is to be codependent. But then in my world, right, if my spouse comes home and I guilt trip him about being 10 minutes late, and I get all worked up and stuff, if I'm still functioning from that level and my actions are coming from that, well, then where am I functioning from? It doesn't matter what I quote unquote know. It's where I function from. And the same can be said of anything. I can say it really, you know, a good example, like your kids pick up what you do, right? So good example is you can teach your kids how important it is to save your money and be thrifty and this and that and the other thing. And then they watch mom go out and blow $500 on shoes when she's complaining that she can't, you know, go take them out for ice cream. And what does that show the kids? Well, mom says one thing, but she does another. And it's what she does that actually makes the impact on them. So they're teaching, they're learning, you know, what society says you should do, but they're also learning what society does do. And they learn what wins, right? The winning position. What wins is almost never in alignment with the spoken value system. So on one, so recognize that, that me talking you through this is coming in at multiple levels of understanding. And on, in one respect, like it may seem kind of basic. Yeah, we've heard this kind of stuff before. But what I'm pointing you to is the fact that when you really get into this, this is very deep work. Because it requires that you go in and question your motivation for your actions. And that you question the agenda behind the thought process that you allow in to run in your consciousness. And why is that thought process, why do you entertain that? Even from the place of being in resistance to it. Because remember, we aren't here to change anything. Boy, that's tough. People want to change everything. But we aren't here to change anything. There's nothing wrong with polarization. It's a complete system as it is. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not your nature, but it doesn't mean there's something wrong with it. Right? And at a certain level of consciousness, you wake up and you wake up out of the dream of separation. And you can be in that state of functioning and still be in a polarized world. And that's where the Christ fits in. The Christ can be in the world, but the Christ and the way the Christ functions in the world is not dictated by the underpinnings of the world. And that's where my students are moving, and this is why I'm bringing this up tonight. Because at a point, everyone's got to get into that level where they really start to question. Here's something that, you know, in the beginning you used to process it all out. This really bothered me. And then so you go in and you're tracking back, you know, you're finding the beliefs and the things that got triggered, and then you're tracking back where you picked those up to begin with and how it was learned, and then you're doing all the work around it. And that's awesome. And that does a lot as far as your dissolution goes. But beyond that, there comes a point where it's not about the writing work anymore. It's about what you do with it. Because I could sit and process the same story for 40 years. It's still going to come up. Why wouldn't it? It's part of the program. Okay, so it's part of the program. But what are you going to do with it? You've seen what you need to see. Now, what are you going to do with it? It means the next time the story comes up, it's time to pull back and to make different choices. And that's the part that takes real courage. Because it's so scary to make a choice that feels, you know, from the space of the ego, that doesn't feel good. You have to think, you've been functioning from an instinctual level, right? And you have made choices and everything that are very instinctual to you. So you'll have someone say, you know, I had a gut feeling. Don't trust your gut feeling. Gut feeling's coming out of polarity. You trust your intuition, though. Because your intuition is divine. But your instinct isn't divine. It's polarized. Fight or flight is not divine. It's utterly and completely polarized. And it's not you. It's not functioning from a level that is capable of conscious choice. Fight or flight is not capable of conscious choice. It's reactive. And the Christ can be in the middle of something that the world would see as, you know, a highly volatile situation, and it's not reactive. It will take right action based on everything that's there that needs to be looked at in any given moment. And that's where you're moving toward that level of awareness. You know, it's not for lazy people. It requires a great deal of focus and a great deal of attention, you know. Especially initially before it's really been actualized. And at some point it comes out of your knowing. And then it's not difficult at all. It's effortless because it's you. And it comes out of your knowing. But in that in-between stage, it feels really hard. Because sometimes you have to make choices that will be in just complete opposition to what the ego wants. But what you can see is in that moment that if I do that again, it's not serving me, meaning it's not serving my heart. It's not serving my conscience. And if you start to experience those subtle energies that are telling you, because it's happening all the time and you just aren't aware of it, you'll be in any situation and there'll be this little internal check that says something's not right here. And probably almost, you know, at least 9 times out of 10, you don't pay any attention to it. Blow it off. Shrug it off. Eh, I'm just imagining that, or eh, you know. Whatever. And then sometimes those nudges have to get really hard for you to pay attention. Well, what I'm asking students to do is start paying attention when they're really subtle and doing something about it then. Then, not waiting until the world has to bring it to you so you feel like you got hit by a train, but do it beforehand. You do it beforehand and you deal with it in the right manner, then it doesn't have to happen in the world like that. Your actions will dictate that. You understand? If you go in and you do the work, you're gonna balance out any karma that would be there anyway. That's going on during dissolution work, is your karma's getting balanced. Everything here is about balance. So karmically, you're imbalanced. And you have the opportunity in doing inner work to bring balance to that karma. And literally, I kid you not, you have the opportunity to function in the world without creating any karma. Which is a beautiful thing. You understand that's where a Christed being functions from. They've already balanced all the karma out and now they're living in the world and they're not creating anything new. They're free. Such a gift. You know, and a Christed being is not, this is a good time to talk about it with Christmas coming. I love to say Merry Christmas to people because I don't see it as a religious thing. It's about the Christ. And the Christ exists in all walks of life, in all colors, in all genders, in all shapes and forms. Every single one of you is a Christ on one level. Whether you've awoken to that fact or not doesn't change what it is. You are the Christ. It's singular. It's singular. Jesus saying, I and my Father are one, that's exactly what he's saying. The Christ is singular, individuated, never separated. It's singular. Just as God is appearing in all forms as everything, that is the Christ. That's what we need to be celebrating this time of year. It's not about a religion. It's not about a person, right? It's about celebrating that divinity within each one of us and within everything, not just people, within everything. Everything is divine. And you've got to be able to look at the world around you and celebrate the divinity that exists within everything, even if that thing you're looking at has no recognition of it within themselves or within you. It doesn't matter. That's the point. So I picked tonight's meditation song very specifically. And it's a Christmas song that you all know. This version I just find so beautiful. I want you to listen to the words, though. I want you to take Jesus, the person, out of this. And I want you to look at it from the space of what the Christ is. Because the words are perfect. And they point right to the experience of actually being Christed and the difference between a fallen humanity and Christed consciousness. That's where we're all headed back to. And in truth, you never left it, but you will wake up again one day and recognize that it was always there and that it will always be there. So on that note, I will leave you to this incredibly beautiful song, and I hope you all have an amazingly wonderful holiday, and we'll be back with you again in the new year. Good night.
The stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our day.